Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, glad you're along with us on this Thursday. You know who's excited right now, Tony? Think about it. Be Terrence. Terrence is brimming with excitement right now. He just got to hear about his favorite Jaguar, Byron Leftwich.
Yeah.
Opening
he did.
Up Jaguars today, this morning.
I love that call, the first of those two highlights there, where it's Byron Leftwich has not been functional today.
Right?
And you're listening to him, and I remember the play, just basically throw up a jump ball to Jimmy
Back
Smith.
Back in the end zone, yeah. Oh, the one to Jimmy, yeah.
Jimmy to get that drive going. Right. And it's like they just haven't had anybody that they can do that with.
Right.
You know, since Jimmy left, and now it feels like they might have, here in Jacksonville, where nothing is happening for this offense, and they have guys that can make something out of nothing.
That was a fourth down play to Jimmy, right?
Yeah.
I believe it was fourth down play, and then Wilford was basically final ticks on the clock at the back of the end zone for Byron Leftwich. So hopefully the Jags can have some more of that drama. Hey, we take some easy wins, too. That would be fine.
No doubt.
But as long as they result in victories. What I miss, how was it the last couple of days? I tell you what, I am much more rested than I have been in months. I slept a lot. I still had my other work to do. But
sure.
So it's not like I just did nothing, but I did, in lieu of doing this program, I slept in for the last two mornings, and it was
You didn't play
fantastic.
Any golf?
Didn't play any golf.
How about that?
No golf, nothing. I just, my body needed to shut down for a couple of days, so now I am fired up and ready to go. So what did I miss over the last couple of days?
Not a whole lot from an on-field perspective, obviously, with the Jags. It was kind of cool.
What?
We had Telvin Smith in yesterday,
yes.
Who was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week after
his
effort over there against Buffalo, and he was funny about it. He came in and he said, you know, I feel like people should be saying Colvin's name when they say mine, right? And kind of trying to share that credit. If I was Colvin, I'd be giving him a hard time in the locker room, like as soon as he walked in, you know, about getting that award if it was me. And I thought the most interesting thing that Telvin had to say, and hopefully it is a turning moment, the turning point for this football team, when we asked him about what it felt like on the sideline after the pick six from Bortles, Telvin said, we all looked at each other, and for the first time since I've been here, we were telling each other we were going to win that game, and it felt like we believed it. And it's the first time that we've been in that kind of crucible where when we were saying that, it felt like we actually believed what we were saying, that we were going to win that game against the Buffalo Bills. And he specifically mentioned the Philadelphia game last year where they take the big lead into halftime, they come back out in the second half, things start going against them, and they just felt like they had no answers. And he said that Sunday felt like the first time that when they got behind, they felt like they were going to win that game, and they were confident about it. I wonder if that is a turning point for a young team, especially with a quarterback as young as Blake Bortles.
It's always interesting. How do you get the confidence that you're going to succeed in those situations if you haven't done it before? Some guys just have that innately that they believe they're going to win in any circumstance. But, you know, maybe I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that it took them that long to feel that way, but I hope it's an ongoing thing, like you said. I hope that now, and because they felt that way and they backed it up in, you know, what was in their own minds with their play on the field. So, you know, I heard Dan and Jeff talking about it quite a bit this morning. It's a shame when you've got only your second win of the season that you've got to take the week off now. But, you know, that's what it is. They'll take them anywhere they can get them at this point in time. So we'll see what the week off brings as they take on the New York Jets next week. And really,
I'm glad
the
week off
of
came this
season.
Week as opposed to last weekend. Right?
I mean, absolutely.
You know,
right. Rather go in with a good feeling than a month worth of losing,
yeah,
right?
So much more. And they get a Jets team that I know Pacelli guaranteed they'd be 5-5 on Monday. You missed that too.
Guaranteed the Jags would be 5-5.
Yeah, he said they're going to win their next three. He didn't put anything on the line, but
well,
he did guarantee they'd be 5-5. He also guaranteed the win over Buffalo last weekend on Jaguars Monday.
Well, there you go. So he's feeling hot. He's feeling frisky.
He's feeling good about
a
four-game winning streak.
Hey, why not? So let's get a two-game winning streak, right? Let's just win the next time they play. Forget what came before, what's coming after that, and just go out there and win. To do that, they're going to have to get some strong performances in the second half of the season, even though they've only played seven games. Basically, once this bye week is over, we're into the second half of the season for the Jacksonville Jaguars, although they won't have played exactly half of their games. Today, the fan feedback question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asks you which Jaguar, or if there are multiple ones that you'd like to nominate, do you think will take a major step forward in their play in the second half? See, for me, a question like this, Tony, it'd be difficult to answer Allen Robinson, for instance, because Allen Robinson's already on a pace to put up some pretty rare numbers when it comes to the all-time hierarchy of Jaguars single-season receiving. So I don't know how much more he can do than the pace he is on currently right now. But if you think he's going to take a big step forward, even beyond the play he's doing now, fine. It's up to you to nominate the players, and we'll discuss some of them throughout the course of the broadcast today. We'll also look around the National Football League a little bit, hopefully check in with Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union, taking a few days off himself. But we'll get his thoughts on the state of the Jags right now as they head into the bye week this weekend, and maybe talk a little bit about over the course of the next day or so. How's your weekend different as a Jaguar fan on the bye week? What do you do with that time? Do you just sit home and watch NFL football like it was a weekend with the Jags on the road, and you'd be doing that anyway? Or do you maybe turn your mind to other pursuits? So we'll discuss that a little bit along the way as well. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board today. It's also the number for the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 904-641-1010. You can text us there. You can tweet us with your reaction to the fan feedback question of the day at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony. And of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. If you'd like to get in and talk any aspect of Jaguar football, phone lines are open to you from this point forward for the next 2 hours at 641-1010. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, happy Thursday, live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. David Garrard in tomorrow on the program, by the way. Tyler, do me a favor, because I keep forgetting. And, you know what?
Yeah.
Never mind. Okay. I was going to ask you to text Ryan O'Halloran. I was going to take care of some business on the air right here. But he just texted me. So we'll check in with him at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. How about
great.
That?
Sounds good.
That's fantastic. I'm glad we're all on the same page. I'm happy, Mike. I get a little sleep, and I come back, and everyone's in a good mood because I'm in a good mood, Tony. I think. At least you all should be as we go forward. The text line, 641-1010, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Question, do we have any update on the rehab status of one Dante Fowler Jr.? Not really. I mean, he's rehabbing. That's what he's doing. He had his surgery. He's rehabbing. Haven't heard anything in terms of
no.
He's not on his timetable. Dante Fowler Jr. should have no problem hitting the ground running at the start of next football season.
You wouldn't think so. And I see him around the building every now and then.
Me too.
He's moving around fine.
How you doing, Dante? Yeah, good. Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't get into it like, hey, what's the latest? What exact exercises are you doing?
Sure, and if you're paying attention, you'll see him on the sideline at Jaguars games, mm-hmm. too. I mean, they're not focusing in on him, but you can see him standing there.
Right.
He's with the team, at least. So.
Well, so Derek tore his ACL, and I know every injury is different, but he tore his ACL in week 17 last year, and he was able to come back a couple of weeks ago, so... You know, you're talking, let's call it roughly 10 months, right? 10 months, 10 and a half months, whatever it is. Well, Dante Fowler, 10 and a half months is going to be pretty early in the off season, between 2015-2016 season.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Right. So, you know, give him 12 months and then you're just back to where they were starting rookie mini camps last year. And then you've got several months to build that up and build the mental confidence in that and hopefully be able to play in the preseason. I think that'll be a key for him. You know, go out there and play in the preseason and get some of that questioning out of the way. Am I going to be able to trust this knee? As Derek Marks and many others, pretty much everyone who suffers a torn ACL says, it's about just mentally trusting that your body can do what the doctors tell you it's capable of doing again.
Yeah, and talking to Loggeman on Tuesday, specifically about Derek Marks now, he said, you know, watching him, he still doesn't look like he trusts that leg completely. So he's not obviously the same player that he was last year. He's still a smart guy, and he uses his upper body really well. He deflects a couple passes on Sunday, so he's still making plays for this Jaguars team when he's out on the field, but said it doesn't look like he trusts that leg yet, and hopefully that'll come over the course of the next couple weeks.
Yeah, he's got another week and a half before he has to play on it again, and he's a guy who's already been mentioned by several people as a potential second-half breakout candidate, as a guy that could take a major step forward. That's our question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. They've had several nominees or nominations of Marquise Lee Tony. And this one on the text line, I will read to you, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Optimistic, but I'm going with Marquise Lee. Mad skills, just needs to get healthy. Can you imagine our passing game with Lee in the lineup? I can. I can. And I like the idea of that. I find it, I guess it's not surprising because it's such a, not just as sports fans, we're in such a society, we want everything now instantaneously, and quite often we can have it instantaneously, you know? I mean, it's amazing the world we live in, and when you have to show some patience, even, you know, on a scale of patience, waiting a half a season for a player to come back from injury isn't the most pressing thing you need to show patience for, but it's tough when you're out there, you only have 16 games, your team's season is not going the way you wanted slash expected it to go at this point in time, and you're anxious. You want better results, and you want them now, and you want Marquise Lee out there to contribute, because I think the frustration comes because people believe this guy does have talent. If you just thought he was nothing, there wouldn't be so much angst about him being on the football field. But again, I keep going back to there's some of the reaction I think has been overreaction. We don't know what's going on inside his body. And I mean, we've had people suggest they should just move on from Marquise Lee, which is ludicrous, a season and a half into his career. But Tony, it's not something you can count on. And I guess today that's what we're saying is kind of what do you expect. And some fans may expect that Marquise Lee or be hopeful that he's going to come back and make a big impact. But if they get it, I mean, you've looked at the numbers that the NFL and the Jaguars put out every week. Allen Robinson's ahead of the pace of any 22-year-old wide receiver in the last 20 years not named Randy Moss in terms of yardage and touchdowns. And look at what Allen Hurns is doing. Look at Blake Bortles on a pace to approach or break Jaguars single-season standards for passing and passing touchdowns and the like. And you've got Julius Thomas, who has flashed a little bit, didn't have a big game this week, obviously, but the week before certainly did. And you think, boy, if he had that one more piece, that field stretching piece, that quick twitch guy that even if he's not running deep patterns, can get the ball in his hands, make people miss in a short area, and bring an element of speed and excitement to the offense. And then you've got TJ Yeldon doing what he did last week. All of a sudden, you're thinking your offensive skill positions are not only good, they're actually pretty deep. That's the thing. Can you get him back on the field? Nobody knows when and if he'll be back at what point this season or what he'll be able to do when he gets out there. But I think the potential is got to be one of the most exciting, untapped reserves that the Jags have at this point with the talent on this roster.
Look, Marquise Lee is a better athlete than Brian Walters is. Marquise Lee is a better athlete than Rashad Greene is. And I know the guys in the building love Rashad Greene. They really love that guy and what he can potentially give them as a wide receiver. And I think Greene has something as a move the chains type of guy. I think there's something there. I don't know how raw an athlete he is as far as his ability to get down the field the same way that I feel about Marquise Lee's ability to do that. And you're talking about potentially in the next 3 or 4 weeks getting both of those guys back, getting Marquise Lee and Greene back into this offense over the course of the next month or so. And hopefully Marquise, when he went down again, in my own head, I said it's after the bye week now. With what we've seen from him, it's either he's going to be good enough to go after the bye week or Marquise Lee isn't going to play in 2015. That's kind of where I'm at with Marquise. So we'll see here over the course of the next week and a half whether he can get back out on the field. But I think you are watching an offense develop, and it turns the attention to me so much on what's going on defensively with this football team. They're going to get Dante Fowler Jr. back next year. They're obviously not going to have him this season. So what are they going to be doing this offseason? And for everyone out there, and I know there's going to be people clamoring still for them to go get that alpha prime wide receiver, that's not going to be the focus of this football team, this offense. It's going to be defense, defense, and more defense. And there are reasons for it. They cannot rush the passer. And Dante Fowler Jr. coming back by himself is not going to be the total and complete answer for your pass rush improving. They need another guy outside of Dante, even if he is going to be that player, because to have two guys on the field that you feel like at all times, they can both win. On this play, you put them one-on-one with anybody in the league, these two guys can win and get after the opposing passer, and hopefully the Jags can put themselves in a position where they have that going into next season.
6-4-1-10-10, and certainly this is not, we're not talking draft here in the late October, but I understand your point, just in terms of missing pieces and missing ingredients for this team, and I agree with you that it shouldn't surprise anybody if almost all or even in its entirety, all the draft capital is spent on the defensive side of the football. Now, you may reach a point, like they weren't necessarily targeting A.J. Cann or a guard in round three.
Sure.
That's something that becomes a value and you take it. But clearly, they need secondary help. They need a free safety. Whether they think James Sample ends up there or whether he ends up playing strong safety, I think they're going to look at the defensive backfield. They're certainly going to look at the linebacker core because there's not much depth there, and they've got to add pass rush to this.
And I think there's
team.
A lot to still be shaken out in 2015. You know, you mentioned James Sample. What is he? Right? And hopefully,
we got to find out.
Right. Hopefully he gets back on the field and you can feel more confident about where you want to play him in 2015. Is Cyprian going to develop into the type of player that you want? He played pretty well last week. He had the big fumble that he caused. Loggeman said that outside of that, he played well on Sunday, and it's trying to find that level of consistency with that guy, because 2-3 weeks ago against Indianapolis, he was great. Then he's been bad for the last 2 weeks. Then he found a way to bounce back against Buffalo, and there's just no consistency to the level of his play right now. So they got to find that, or they got to find somebody else that's going to play strong safety for this team. That could be Sample too. We just don't know. There's a lot to be shaken out in that backfield.
One of those guys you would think is the starting strong safety in 2016. At least I think that way, you know. And it, you know, for them, they'd like it to be Cyprian with Sample as the free safety, as they drafted him with that in mind, because then that's one less position you kind of need to plug up, at least as a for a front end guy. You always got to add depth. Let's go to the north side and talk to John first up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good, Mike. How you guys?
Good.
Hey,
what's up?
I was listening the other day when you had Jeff on. I was going to call in, but got caught up at work. I noticed he was talking about a cornerback situation, and he listed every cornerback on the team except Demetrius McCray. I'm trying to find out what the situation is with him this year. I'm kind of disconnected from the team. I'm still going through the games and everything. I'm just not as following him as close as I have been in years past. And I remember Pro Football Focus had him as a top three corner like a year or so ago, and there was a lot of hype around McCray, and then all of a sudden he's not even in the lineup. They start Brock over McCray last week in London, and I'm just kind of curious what's the situation with McCray this year.
Yeah, Tony, I was obviously not here. John, thank you for the call. Jeff commented on the DBs but didn't mention anything about McCray. Is that the
correct
point here he's making? I mean, it's a bit of a mystery, right? To me, at least, it is. I haven't found or heard a great explanation. Maybe they just don't feel like he's playing well enough at this point in time. You know, we've seen guys rise and fall, and while Pro Football Focus, I respect what they do and what they attempt to do, their rankings are not gospel. What's difficult when Pro Football Focus tries to evaluate players, they don't know what the assignment for every player is on every snap. And they try to truly grade every snap of every football game all season long and grade everything you've done as a player. Did you, you know, if you don't know what the guy's responsibility is, it's difficult, I think, to give an overall detailed, accurate picture. They do their best within the parameters they have to work with, and I'll give them credit for watching the film of every single game and every single player and charting it and trying to, you know, to figure that out. But I don't think anybody can really know unless you're sitting there in those meeting rooms on Tell the Truth Monday and you're going over, here's what the game plan was, why were you in this position when you were supposed to be in this position, that kind of thing.
I think there's, look, last week, the coaching staff obviously made it a point to Devon House, who was a starting cornerback for this team, that they were going to pull him out of that job. It's not like he didn't play on Sunday. He played a lot on Sunday because it's the NFL. You're going to be out there with three corners a lot in this league. So Dwayne Grotz was starting on that side and was bad. He was just bad on Sunday. The play where you saw Scuda turn around and just take off down the field chasing a tight end, that was Grotz too, where he followed a guy in man while they were in his zone instead of doing his responsibility on that play. At least that's what Jeff told me on Tuesday. He got beat over the top on the touchdown pass to Marcus Easley, of all people, in the National Football League. I mean, Grotz did not have a good game. He was given way too much space underneath on some plays, too. And I think if you're watching a game like that where that's the guy they promote, Devon House is playing pretty well inside that football game on Sunday, then where is Demetrius McCray, right? Why is it with – you're watching Grotz continue to get beat. Why not put either House or McCray over on that side and see what they're going to do?
Right.
Right? And I can understand that frustration. You're seeing McCray play a lot on special teams right now, and outside of that, he's just not getting much work. He was bad in the preseason. He was just bad at the cornerback spot in the preseason, and maybe they're not seeing anything in practice at this point that gives them any confidence about putting him out there on the field.
Maybe, and I don't know this, but maybe he played over his head last year a little bit, right? Which got everybody excited. That happens sometimes. We just don't know.
There's a reason they went to get Devon House.
Oh, sure.
You know, and it's not just that they saw an opportunity to go get a corner that they thought could start. They wanted to upgrade their corner spot.
They did, but I do think you typically go in with the mindset that you almost have three starting cornerbacks in the National Football League at this point. I think they expected big things out of Colvin. And Tony, I do think they expected McCray to be one of those top three guys, at least that appeared to be. And so maybe, you know, they were surprised as well this offseason when he didn't play up to that. Look, more often than not, guys are later round picks for a reason. They're deficient in some area. And, you know, he's a seventh round pick and he looked like a gem and may still turn out to be one. I'm not trying to write off the career of Demetrius McCray, but no. Clearly he hasn't given them on the practice field what they want to see out of him, or he'd be getting more opportunities on game day at this point in time. But I can't tell you what it is exactly that he's been missing for them. And that is an area that they say you can't have enough good cornerbacks. That's a cliche, but it's pretty close to being true in the National Football League. And if there's an opportunity next year to draft what they consider to be a premier corner that fits what they want to do, I don't think they'd pass up that opportunity.
I'm
not saying they'd take that over a pass rusher, right?
Sure.
But somewhere along the lines, you shouldn't be surprised if they try to add to that position as well. 641-1010. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back, get more of your calls coming up here if you're so inclined to get on board Jaguars today on this Thursday morning. Also text us at 904-641-1010 on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Your question of the day, which Jaguar player or players do you expect a big second half step forward from this season in 2015, we're talking about, compared to the level that they've given you through the first seven games of the year? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, we're live at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Jaguars today live at Everbank. Tomorrow, David Garrard in. I think we will be moving over to the friendly confines at Hogan Road tomorrow, Tony. Ghost town in effect here today. But in addition to that, you got all the Florida Georgia stuff going on. The parking lot's starting to fill up around here. I don't know who's allowed to park in Lot J this early. A lot of cars out there in Lot J.
I don't know what was going on. They said Sea of Blue. I don't know what that is.
Oh, is that right? I don't know what that is either. But there are all kinds of events going on out here with Florida Georgia weekend upcoming. 641-1010. If you'd like to get on board, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars today. And your question today, which Jaguar player or players are due for a big step forward in their play in the second half of the season? We'll go through some of the nominees a little bit later on the show. Ryan O'Halloran's going to join us in about 20 minutes from the Florida Times Union, and we'll take your calls now, including Mark in Mandarin, who's up next here on 1010XL. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning.
What's up?
Join your talk. Listen, we're talking about the deficiencies in the players on defense, and I'm no X and O guy, but what about a deficiency in the scheme? Maybe these guys have figured Gus out by now.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, look, I think the Jags certainly have a deficiency in terms of pure pass rush talent on this football team. Guys that can win one-on-one matchups. And I think, Tony, when you're a system or a coach that coaches a system overall that wants to get pressure with four down linemen and you don't have guys that can create that kind of havoc up front, you're going to struggle greatly. And I think that's why you saw this past week a move towards more pressure being brought, for good or bad. There were some plays that were given up because they blitzed, but there are also some opportunities that they created directly because of the blitzing, a la Aaron Colvin forcing a fumble that was returned for a touchdown for the Jags. And I think you're going to see that going forward. I don't think the scheme has worked. It certainly, nobody was complaining about the scheme when Seattle was going to back-to-back Super Bowls. But is the personnel there to match it? And when it's not, you've got to be able to make adjustments. I don't know if they made an adjustment to sending more pressure early enough for my taste this year. I probably would have done it a month ago.
Well, you're watching Seattle struggle more on defense than they have the last 4 or 5 years. So maybe there is something to the idea that teams are catching up with the scheme itself of what Seattle was doing and consequently what Jacksonville is doing. I'll say this. There has never been anybody that has figured out how to scheme to beat a team that can just get pressure when they want to with four guys. Teams that are able to do that win.
You saw that with Seattle last week.
Right.
Michael Bennett had 3.5 sacks. If your guys are winning one-on-one matchups up front,
yep,
then that changes the complexion of your entire defense.
Yeah, it changes everything. You're getting the quarterback off a spot. There's not time to get into the offense the way that you want to. It changes everything. The Giants won 2 Super Bowls because they got pressure with their four. They didn't have to blitz. They had guys that were good enough to win up front. And whatever coverages you want to run behind that, they matter, but they don't matter nearly as much as if you have guys that win consistently in your front four. It's not. I don't think it's about the league catching up to Gus Bradley. I think it's about the Jaguars have never found the right formula to get pressure with the guys up front, not without having to send more than the four guys that they would like to be able to send because they'd like to cover with seven. You have an advantage if you can cover with seven because you got more guys covering than they got guys going out.
Right.
And when you have to send more than that, now your numbers are dwindling in coverage. So it's why teams across the league say we'd like to get pressure with our front four. And for guys that have figured out innovative ways to scheme blitzes, Rex Ryan's been one of those guys. Dick LeBeau's been one of those guys in this league. They figure out ways to confuse teams. But one way that has been a consistent winner in this league without confusing anybody is, here's the four we're sending. You can't block them. You don't have good enough guys to block the four guys that we can send at you. It's why they draft a guy like Dante Fowler, because they think he's one of those types of guys. Doesn't matter who he's standing in front of. He can beat them. That's why they draft a guy like that.
Right. That being said, you need more than one of those guys, right? Because we've seen that at times J.J. Watt has wrecked game plans, but you've also seen games where the Houston Texans, when he gets shut down, nobody else is there to fill the void at times. Now, sometimes they do have other guys. Whitney Mercilus and Clowney has not been a pass rush factor to this point.
And maybe in 2016, Cendarek Marks turns back.
Maybe he does. Maybe he does. Maybe he becomes more the guy he was last year. Eight and a half sacks out of a defensive tackle is a large number in the National Football League. If he can get back to that level, that means he's creating a lot more ripple effect than just those 8 or 9 plays that he's making by tackling the quarterback in the backfield, because he's caving that offensive line. How many other additional times where he's drawing double teams, bringing extra guys, and then all of a sudden when you think you've got a guy to chip on the defensive end, he's paying attention over here to Cendarek Marks, which opens it up for whomever that happens to be. But I agree. I don't think Dante Fowler is enough. Quite frankly, and I don't think they'll look at it like he's enough either. I think every opportunity they get to add quality pass rush next year, they're going to take advantage of it. The problem is, everybody else wants the same thing, right? Yeah. You don't get much of it in free agency. There's not much quality pass rush. Every once in a while, you find a guy who's a good fit for your scheme, and typically, those kind of guys turn out to be 8 sack guys, 6 to 8 sack guys, right? So once in a while, you get guys like Michael Bennett who go out there and get the free agent contract and then actually live up to it. But it's not all that frequent that it comes around.
The Giants just had their pass rusher blow off his hand.
Right.
And they were willing to just wait to see how it's going to play out.
Right.
That's how important pass rush is.
And they brought him back with 3 fingers.
Yeah.
And on an incentive-laden deal, because that you're right. That is how important pass rush is to this league. And everyone else, when it becomes available, is going for the same pool of players. And one of the reasons that Dave Caldwell, not the sole reason, but one of the reasons he talked about what made Dante Fowler maybe a little bit more attractive this year, was you do have to look at what is going to be in the draft next year and how deep is that and how many difference-making pass rushers are there going to be available. And they felt at the time, Dave Caldwell said, we thought there was one guy who was a first-round talent next year in terms of pass rush. We can assume that's Joey Bosa of Ohio State. I don't know that for a fact, but let's assume that's the case. It doesn't matter who it is. They only feel like there's one guy. Chances are you're not going to get that guy.
Sure.
So you've got to continue to mine the depths and try to get guys a little bit later and develop them. Well, Andre Branch hasn't really developed at this point in time, right? I mean, Chris Clemens is hit and miss at this point in time. He's an older guy. And, you know, so beyond that, I mean, Fowler was going to be counted on heavily this year. It's not an excuse. You got to go out there and play and find a way to make up for that if you don't have the individual talents. And I think part of that was finally this week saying, the hell with it. It's not working the other way. We'll take a risk that we're going to get burned sometimes by sending extra guys because we will get to the quarterback more often this way.
And I think the team knew that it was going to be a struggle this year. When we talked all offseason from the moment that the season ended about, look, they had solid sack numbers last year, but it didn't feel like a good pass rushing team. It felt like there were huge portions of football games where they couldn't get pressure at all. And it didn't matter who they were sending, how they were sending them, they could not get pressure at all. And I think you saw a team that understood that. That's why they go and draft Dante Fowler Jr. I don't know if they were ever in on a guy like Greg Hardy, and that may have been an organizational decision that we're not bringing that kind of guy in. But I know they offered Alden Smith. I know they did. And that Alden Smith decided he was just going to stay on the West Coast because that's where his family and support system is. And that's why he's in Oakland and not in Jacksonville. I know they talked to that guy, right? I mean, they knew where their deficiency was going to be. The options are so limited in one offseason because pass rushers don't become available, like you said, Mike. And they spent a first-round pick on one to hopefully get themselves in a better place. This team with a pass rush, I think, is a good football team. I don't think they're an okay football team. I think they're a good football team with a pass rush because of what they can do on offense right now. They just cannot get after the opposing quarterback.
You create one more turnover per game, right? Just one more turnover per game. One more swing that maybe the other team doesn't score and maybe you get a score. That can be a 14-point swing at times. Doesn't always guarantee that. But you create that one more opportunity for your offense and oftentimes, hopefully, on a short field. And it's not just the turnovers, Tony. It's the disruption on a play-to-play basis. Again, going back to the Seattle-San Francisco game from last week, Colin Kaepernick reached a point where he wanted no part of being in the pocket. And once you start getting pressure on a quarterback, they're expecting it and they're looking for it. And all of a sudden, if you're getting there in however many 2 seconds or whatever it is, well, all of a sudden that clock gets to 1.5 and they're panicking already.
Yeah.
And you speed up the entire process of the opposing quarterback. And there's little that you can do to disrupt another team other than get better than getting consistent pressure. They haven't had it. And, you know, finally, I think Bob Babich did what I would have liked him to do a lot earlier. It's just go for broke. And I understand. I'll go back to the New England game. I think they should have come after Brady harder. At a certain point, you're getting chopped up by not getting to him, and he's got all the time in the world to pick you apart. He will pick you apart. Most NFL quarterbacks will pick you apart in that circumstance. Brian Hoyer can pick you apart if you give him time, and he had time. You saw what happened last week. The Dolphins got pressure. All of a sudden, the Dolphins in the last 2 weeks have gotten 10 sacks after practically not getting any through the first 5 weeks of the season. And what a drastic difference that's made for that football team.
No doubt. It's why they're winning in blowout games. By the way, since someone did text in, I did look it up as well. Sea of Blue is actually a fire department. It's an annual march to honor the fallen firefighters from this area.
Well, that is a very worthy endeavor, then.
Which is why it's packed out there in Jay right now.
Well, there you go. Interesting enough. I would think, would it not be a sea of red if you're honoring fallen firefighters, right? Because
I don't think they don't wear the red. They wear their blues.
I just think sea of blue, I think police officers more than I would think firefighters. But regardless, first responders everywhere deserve the salutes for doing everything they do. So that's pretty cool deal. There's a lot of cool stuff that goes on surrounding Florida, Georgia. I will plan to be far away from it this weekend as much as possible. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding? I don't know what I'm going to do with a Sunday, Tony. I'm debating. Do I sleep in? Do I get it? There's a 9:30 football game on Sunday morning. Do I go out and play with my kid outside? Or do I say, sorry, Daddy's working. Got to watch football.
Well, you're going to play FanDuel, right?
Oh, of course. I always do FanDuel. There's no question I'm going to do FanDuel, but I can set my lineup. That's a beautiful thing about it. I don't have to watch it constantly. I can be out and about. I'll have my lineup all locked in. And that's one thing I haven't done yet. FanDuel.com/Mike. Get on it and sign up. We cap it at 200 every single week. Did not have the week last week that I had the week before. Despite having Todd Gurley in every lineup, Tony, he was the one constant that I did right A lot of the other stuff was not apparently quite as correct as having Todd Gurley in my lineup. All right, coming back with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL, then we'll spend a few minutes with Ryan O'Halloran for the Florida Times Union, get his thoughts on where the Jags stand as they enter the bye week here in week 8 in the National Football League. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in 1950, October 29th, Detroit's Wally Trippett, Tony, established an NFL record with 294 kickoff return yards against the L.A. Rams. The record has since been broken by Tyrone Hughes, but the average of 73.5 yards per return still stands. Pretty impressive numbers right there. Four kickoff returns for 294. Famous birthdays for this date. A guy who's become just a regular visitor to Radio Row. Charlie Brown, the Washington Redskin receiver. We seem to see him there every year. Nice guy. 1958, he was born, turns 57 years old today. Two-time Pro Bowler and a member of the Redskins' Fun Bunch receiving corps in the 1980s. The Tony, the subject of my worst interview ever in sports radio in Jacksonville. Who would that be? Do you recall who that would be? He turns 37 today, to give you an age range.
I remember he just kept going to his sponsor, right?
No, no, he kept going to his sandwich, actually, at the
time.
Who was it? That would be Travis Henry.
That's right.
Travis Henry, also the author of 11 Children by 10 Different Moms. So, hey, you know, just the facts, man.
You
just
an author credit for that?
Well, he authored, you know, you could use that. I'm using a little poetic license there. He also authored himself a conviction, a multi-year conviction on cocaine trafficking charges.
Yes, he did.
And wasn't the brightest tool in the shed or the sharpest ray of light, whatever, to mix my metaphors thoroughly. So there you have it. Travis Henry, 37 years. I imagine not 37 years young today. I have a feeling life has worn on him hard in those 37 years. And also born on this day in 1987, the Red Rifle, Tony. Is he the Red Rifle or is he the redheaded stepchild? He is Andy Dalton. Two Pro Bowl appearances. Looks like he's well on his way to a third this year, but will be judged by his performance in the postseason more than anything.
No doubt.
And he's having a terrific year up until this point in time and can really put a stranglehold on the AFC North that the Bengals are able to get a victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers this weekend. That is this date in football history. It's brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They are the creators of the Somnimed Custom Fit Snore Guard, and they're going to make your loved ones love you. If you've got a snoring issue for yourself or the rest of your family, trust me, if you've got one, the whole family's got one, call Dr. McCall at 620-9225. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Dallas Cowboys running back Joseph Randall reportedly left the Cowboys facility unexpectedly yesterday after being informed that Darren McFadden had been promoted to the starting job for the boys. That story, though, continuing to develop with Adam Schefter and Todd Archer reporting that Randall is expected to be suspended by the league for a violation of the league's personal conduct policy stemming from an incident during the offseason, actually last February, involving Randall and the mother of his son, where he allegedly broke a window and pointed a gun at her. The charges were dropped, but the league reportedly going to suspend Randall after conducting their own investigation into that incident. That story continuing to develop. Tennessee Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota returned to the team's practice with a brace on his knee, but his status for his game against Houston this weekend remains unclear. And Jason Pierre-Paul returned to Giants practice for the first time this season yesterday, attending team meetings and working on the side after signing a contract with the team and passing a physical earlier this week. The timetable for Pierre-Paul's return remains unclear, with some reports saying that the Giants are targeting either Week 10 or Week 12 for his 2015 debut. Some of the contract numbers surfacing now, $2.55 million base salary for him, $1.5 million of it guaranteed for injury and skill, and can earn a maximum of $9.76 million with incentives, which includes playing time and sacks over the course of whenever he can get back on the field.
I was thinking they asked JPP how it feels to finally sign his contract, get it done. He said, mostly two thumbs up. That's what he said. By the way, we want Tennessee to beat Houston, right? Is that what we want this weekend, right? Tennessee's sitting there at 1-5. Houston's 2-5, right? So that put Houston at 2-6 and Tennessee at 2-5 and not really gaining any clearance on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I suppose so. It seems still like, got two to play against Tennessee.
Right. I mean, it seems like the reasonable route to go here. Let's have the Titans win over the Texans this weekend. Let's welcome in our next guest on the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
What's delicious are those sizzling hot takes of one Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union joining us now. What's up, Ryan? How are you?
Good, fellas. Long time no talk.
I guess it has been, right? How was the trip to London, first of all? Everything go okay for you?
Yep. You sort of get into a routine after 3 years, and flew back to the United States on Tuesday morning, and currently in New York City for a couple of days.
Nice. Well, we appreciate you taking a few minutes out with us. I know you like your downtime, and it's well-deserved with the bye week coming up. How do you think the Jags are positioned here, Ryan? Obviously, at 2-5, that's where they're positioned. But coming off that win, I understand the bye week here interrupts the flow of the schedule. But can they gain some momentum, whether it's not just off of victory, but over the fact that they were – in a position of adversity late in the game where Blake Bortles had thrown another pick six, but they kind of rallied around that and didn't let them, let it deter them from going down. And they, you know, pulled out the game when they had to have a touchdown drive. They pulled it out late.
Yeah. And I think it's all of the above, Mike, in terms of can you get momentum from the way you played in the first half? Yes. Can you get it from the way you came back when, I mean, who would have expected them to drive down the field after they blew that lead? Yes, they gained momentum from that. But then they can gain some momentum from the fact that the rest of the division isn't doing anything either, and it's in front of them. Now, the question is, okay, this is a team that's really never been able to cash in on that kind of good fortune. We'll see how they play against the Jets and the Ravens, and then the Titans on a short week, because they have three games come up pretty quickly, one after the other. So we'll see if they gain anything from that win over Buffalo, but I think the biggest thing they gained is it just would have been an absolute catastrophe of a loss.
Yeah, and they obviously had some things they can learn from coming out of that game as well. I think the chief among them is, what are they going to do in short yardage going forward, Ryan?
Well, I go T.J. Yeldon, I go Denard Robinson, I go Tyson Alualu, I go Julius Thomas, I go Mercedes Lewis, I go any direction than what they did go. I agree with Gus going for it four times. I would have given Toby Gerhardt two shots from the one. Okay, you've had your two shots. You can't get it done. You're done. I would have tried and spread the field a little bit to create some running lanes for Yeldon. And I would have said, okay, if Denard Robinson, if you're healthy, maybe you get a shot. So I think that's one of the many things they have to look at during these last couple of days.
Ryan, we're asking folks today, our fan feedback question of the day is, which Jaguar player or players do you think will take a significant step forward in the second half of the season based on how they played in the first half? In other words, Allen Robinson already putting up some pretty impressive numbers. It's going to be difficult for him to take a major step forward from that level of play. So give us a guy on each side of the ball, offense, defense, that you think has the potential to play a lot better in the second half than they did in the first half so far.
Well, it's an obvious one, but not so much obvious. It is Telvin Smith has played every snap this year, but until this past week, maybe running around a little bit too much. He was getting a lot of tackles, but when you're on the field a lot, the ball finds you. But he didn't have the takeaways that I thought he would have going into the year. Maybe he can turn that interception. He had a couple other big tackles. Maybe he can turn that into a corner turn of a second half of the season. And on offense, I'm going to go with Yeldon because I think they have to be committed to him in every way possible. Every situation, they say they have confidence in him in every situation. I think he's going to get to 1,000 yards, and I think you're really going to see him take over the offense in the second half.
How much did his performance surprise you? It very much surprised me. I didn't know he'd be able to go that much with as little practice time as he had carrying that groin injury in. I don't think they win that game unless he is playing up to the level he played in.
Yeah, I mean, as it was happening, you're saying, okay, he had not practiced fully because of the injury. You know, the kid's sucking it up, very impressive. Looked like he had some more room to run. So I think the line did a nice job blocking the run when he was in the game. Other times they did. Well, then it becomes even more impressive when he says after the game that he wasn't sure he was going to play because he was ill. He took an IV bag Saturday, an IV bag Sunday morning. So, you know, obviously a soft-spoken guy, but in my experience covering this league is a running back, because of just how physical the position is, he's going to become a natural leader just by his actions. And, you know, when you have guys in that locker room on Sunday afternoon, bringing him up specifically, saying, he's tough, see what he did on this play, just see how he picked up that linebacker. When the teammates are noticing it and they're bringing it up to the media, that means they're impressed.
The bye week coming up for the Jags this week, it's close enough to the middle of the season to start asking questions like this, Ryan. Offense, defense, special teams, coaching, what kind of grades do you think the Jags have in those areas through the first 7 weeks?
Well, since they've won two games, it's tough to give any flying Fargos. But defensively, I give them a D. They're getting some sacks, but their leading sack guy is a corner. Their leading interception guy is a linebacker. So on offense, I give them a B because just how bad they were last year, and they're going downfield. They have obviously found a running back in Yeldon, and they're scoring. You know, their production has improved, even though Julius Thomas hasn't gotten going yet. Special teams has got to be a concern. Right now it's a mess. Granted, you lose both return guys, but if it was me, this kicker wouldn't be around anymore. I'm not impressed by the punter. I don't see a reason why he'll be back next year. And then coaching, I give them a D as well because of the 2-5 record. They should have won in Indianapolis. They should have beat Tampa, and should have blown Buffalo out.
Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, here with us. Ryan, we continue to get questions, Tony and I do, about Demetrius McCray. I know we've brought this up with you before, but how come he is not playing much right now, at least on the defensive packages?
Well, obviously they feel Gross is ahead of McCray, and they don't play hardly any dimes, so that prevents a fourth corner from getting on the field. And when they did do it against Buffalo, it was a third safety. But I think they just feel comfortable with Gross as that. You know, I think he's going to be the third guy in that game next week. I mean, it's ridiculous that he was the second guy against Buffalo. But I haven't really explored that much because there's so many other problems to talk about.
Right. Well, based on the way he played last week, I don't know if he deserves to be the third guy, at least in the short term. But
that's another discussion because, okay, when Demetrius was in there, do you remember him getting beat like Dwayne Gross got beat? No. So what was, he's probably not hiding an injury. So, it merits some investigation.
Right. We're going to sick you on that one, Ryan O'Halloran, when you get back from the Big Apple. Which positions, if any, merit consideration for lineup changes in going into the second half of the season now that they've got a little bit extra time to assess the roster?
I look at tight end. Obviously Julius is your starter. For all these years they've said how great of a run blocker Mercedes Lewis is. He's slipped in that area. You saw Nick Jacobs. I mean, just don't throw it to him. If you just ask him to block, he can deliver a punch on some of those wham blocks that Rich Gannon pointed out during the telecast accurately. So maybe that's a consideration. On defense, I mean, obviously I would put House back in his role. I think Sample's going to be the no doubt free safety when he gets healthy. What's the harm in seeing what Chris Smith can do? See if he can give you a little bit of a spark with a four-man rush. And they have their reasons, but I'll still be on the stump for seeing Ryan Davis play more.
All right, well, hopefully we'll get you back here in studio next Thursday for a full show, and we'll kind of really give a mid-season report on the state of the Jags and where things stand through your eyes. But while you're up in New York, we know you're a fan of taking in some shows. What are you going to see when you're up there?
Well, I did a doubleheader yesterday, and I'm going to Book of Mormon tonight, which I've never been able to work my schedule out to see.
It's awesome.
I'm going to enjoy that. And then when they come back up here next week, it's going to be, I'm going to go see the big one. I'm going to go see Hamilton, which is probably the most talked about show in the city right now. So it's fun. And the Mets are a rumor up here, except in the newspapers.
They're just a rumor at this point in time. Are you going to try? Are you a baseball guy enough that you would try to score a ticket to the Fall Classic for game 3, 4, or 5?
If I'm leaving tomorrow, come back home. But if I was in town tomorrow night, I've been more apt to scalp a ticket for Rangers Maple Leafs than Mets.
There
Royals.
You go. All right. I should say for the Kansas City Royals more so than the New York Mets at this point in time. He is Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter, simply at Ryan O'Halloran. And even the hardest working man in the print business takes a break for a couple days from time to time. Rhino, we appreciate you checking in on your time off, and enjoy your time up in the Big Apple, and scout out all the good venues because you'll be back up there shortly, but we'll look forward to seeing you here next week, all right?
Okay, fellas, thanks.
You got it, buddy. Rhino Howard of the Florida Times Union, good sport to join us here, taking a little vacation time this week during the bye, which I'm sure a lot of the players are doing as well. 641-1010. We'll get back to your calls coming up next. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you. Don't forget, coming up this afternoon from 2 to 3 o'clock, Tony and I have the FanDuel Fantasy Forecast getting you ready for Week 8 of the National Football League season, which kicks off tonight with the Patriots and the Miami Dolphins, the suddenly red-hot resurgent Miami Dolphins,
yep,
playing in the AFC East. So we'll get into that a little bit this afternoon as well. You can join us for that program coming up on 1010XL in about 2 hours and 45 minutes. We'll take your calls and your tweets and texts coming next. This is Jaguars Today live on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today with no Jaguars today. They're off this week, as you well know, as the Florida Georgia game invades EverBank this weekend. We are going to skedaddle out of here. We'll be doing the show over at 1010XL World Headquarters tomorrow. David Garrard will join us as we wrap up the bye week. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, though, live at EverBank this morning. Tony, have you seen what tickets on the secondary market are going for Sunday Night Football? Denver is hosting Green Bay.
Something like $3,000, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. I mean, look, you've got two undefeated teams, right? You've got Rodgers versus Manning, so you've got, you know, two great quarterbacks playing against each other. Obviously, you would suspect for the last time, unless they somehow meet in the Super Bowl this year, which is possible. They're both undefeated at this point in time. I as an aside, do you think Peyton Manning plays at all beyond this year?
No.
I don't either. I think this is it. He's going to make one last run through the postseason, try to hold it together, and that is going to be it, whatever result comes of it. But tickets that typically sell in like the upper end zone go for $50. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're selling for between $400 and $700 in the upper, in the nosebleeds right now. $400 to $700, depending on where you get them in the nosebleeds. The lower level tickets, face value, is $180, and they're going for more than $3,300.
Holy cow.
On the secondary market. How much do you love your Jags? What would it take for you, if the Jags were undefeated in Week 8, playing an undefeated Green Bay team? They play Green Bay next year. Let's presume the NFL does the right thing and brings that game to Jacksonville,
right,
and not to London. No offense to our brethren over there, but they don't seem to care who they play. They show up anyway, okay? We want the Green Bay game here in town. So let's say the Jags are 7-0, taking on a 7-0 Green Bay Packer team, Tony, and you had a $200 lower level ticket. First of all, if you can afford a $200 lower level ticket, you're probably doing okay financially, right? But,
sure.
But let's say you got a $200 ticket to the game. What would it take, do you think, for the typical Jaguar fan? I don't know if there is such thing as a typical fan. There's a whole spectrum of fans. What would it take? 10 times face value? Would that be enough to move you off the spot? I mean, they're getting more than 10 times face value out in Denver,
yeah,
right now.
I don't know. I mean, you would think that you're probably, if you're selling it for that, you're probably selling it to a Packers fan.
Could be.
You know, so there's that consideration as well. Like, I hear those kind of numbers in Denver. I'm sure some of it is guys that just have tickets. They don't want to go mess with it. So I can turn this around for all this kind of money.
No doubt.
Why wouldn't I? Right? But I think a lot of it is there's Packers fans that are saying, I don't get an opportunity to watch the Broncos here against the Packers ever. So I'll pay whatever I have to pay.
Get to go to Denver, smoke all that dope, and
right,
not get arrested.
Right.
right?
It's so. One of the national fan bases here in this country is the Green Bay Packers. They're everywhere.
And when they're in Denver, they put the green in Green Bay, don't they?
I don't know. Probably $2,000.
$2,000. Just look, it's the memories. Remember that time the undefeated Jaguars led by Blake Bortles eviscerated the undefeated, previously undefeated Packers? I mean, pretty cool memory to have.
Sure.
$2,000, you'd eventually spend it, but not immediately.
I could spend it on memories.
You can create $2,000 worth of memories with that kind of money. You can buy season tickets for the following year and then still have a little bit left over on the side. So anyway, those are a hot commodity right now. A couple of stories from around the National Football League wanted to touch on. The justice system of the National Football League is an interesting one to watch.
Investigating their own things.
I had forgotten, and I quickly, once it was mentioned in a story about Joseph Randall, I'd forgotten about the underwear incident, but how could I have forgotten about it? He tried to shoplift some underwear, and that was like last year. What was the reasoning he gave behind that? Did he give a reason behind that, or was it just he really liked that underwear?
I don't remember.
I don't recall either.
He probably said something like he didn't realize it or something.
Oh, I'm sure. Nobody ever realized it. He'd be apparently tried to shoplift some underwear in cologne, but
and guess how much the underwear was valued at?
Like $12, wasn't it?
It was a two-pack of Polo underwear valued at $39.50.
Well, Joseph Randall's not, he hadn't had that big contract yet, so $39.50. Who needs to pay $20 for a pair of underwear, by the way?
Apparently Joseph Randall. Apparently
not Joseph Randall. But who thinks that's a good idea to pay
$40? He was tired of buying the cheaps. He was like, I'm going to get myself some nice underwear today.
Cheaps are just as good, man. They're just as good. They last just as long. All right. But much more seriously, in February, he was arrested, and the mother of his child got a protection order from abuse that was against him. She got a protection order. He was not charged with anything ultimately, but now reports are coming out, and this in the wake of him disappearing yesterday as he got demoted. DeMarco Murray, it was announced, Darren McFadden will start the next game for the Dallas Cowboys. He had a very good game as Randall left with an oblique strain.
Mm-hmm.
Murray took advantage, had the best game by a Cowboy running back this year. And so Randall was supposed to get treatment yesterday for his injury and just left the facility.
Yep.
Apparently that's a thing now. Like Ryan Mallett doesn't need to show up. You know, Ryan Mallett, please don't anybody bail this knucklehead out and give him a job. Please, New England, don't be so dumb as to give him more money just to come in and ride the pine behind Tom Brady, just to thumb your nose at the league and show you how smart they are. Some people just don't deserve another opportunity. Ryan Mallett has the most punchable face in sports, truly. Does he not? I mean, if you didn't know anything about Ryan Mallett, wouldn't you just say, wow, it's unfortunate for him. He may be a nice guy, but he has such a punchable face. He's kind of that guy, right? So anyway, Joseph Randall, the word is, according to ESPN, he is likely to be suspended for a violation of the league's personal conduct policy dating back to February. And so you wonder, why do the wheels of justice grind so slowly in this particular case? I don't think the facts of the case have changed since February. You've had all this time to interview him and get your opinions and everything on the record, and and yet here it seems like there's a pending suspension coming for him later this season. Meanwhile, Johnny Manziel gets pulled over, admits to an officer he's been drinking, although he doesn't appear intoxicated. They don't give him a field sobriety test. His girlfriend claims that he had struck her, pushed her head into a window, and she did have a story that kind of changed on some of the details, and then she said, I don't want to cooperate. And ultimately, he wasn't charged. He wasn't arrested. No report. I guess a report was filed, but there, you know, no pending legal issues for Johnny Manziel. The league has already investigated this and determined that, according to Ian Rappaport, that he will not be disciplined for whatever he did. How do they turn that situation around in a matter of under 2 weeks? And Joseph Randall is still wondering what's going to happen to him, and it looks like he is going to pay a price. Now, Randall has a more, you know, the shoplifting is probably, you know, committing a crime against the proprietor as opposed to just being a drunken fool like Johnny Manziel has been a lot of the time. I don't know if it's his seeking out treatment. It just seems odd to me that this situation, where there's been at least some suggestion of some level of domestic violence is already been figured out to nothing happened, nothing to see here, let's move on, and yet Randall is still processing kind of through the NFL system.
I wonder if the league said anything when the Randall incident happened. Like, I can't remember, you know, the details of all that. I vaguely remember the story until today that Randall was involved with something like that in February, but didn't remember any of the details, and the whole shoplifting thing had completely slipped my mind until we were reminded of it here. But it's I don't know, and I'm sure for the players in the league who already hate Roger Goodell and what the league is doing with some of the things, that the decisions they've made, and now they're conducting their own investigations into investigations that have been dropped by legal authorities and this kind of thing. I'm sure the players remain as upset as ever. And a guy like Joseph Randall being suspended for an incident that happened in February that legally went nowhere, I'm sure the players are going, what is this? Right? Like, what kind of witch hunt is this that the league can now go just talk to people themselves and make a decision
right
on what's supposed to happen? Like, if you're going to put in a conduct policy, that's one thing. And if you're going to say in a conduct policy that if we get in trouble with the law, that we're going to face consequences, that's one thing. To then go beyond that and say, well, we looked into it ourselves and we've decided.
Lower burden of proof. We just went with that. You crossed our boundaries,
right,
where you're not in any legal jeopardy.
And with, you know, the way that the league has gone with players appealing these types of decisions that they've made. I mean, look, Roger Goodell tried to take a stand with Greg Hardy, right? He said 10 games. That's what he wanted him to be gone for when he came back to the Cowboys, and it goes to arbitration, and it's 4, right? And so they're taking a stand now against Joseph Randall again in a case that didn't even get as far as the Hardy thing did, and I'm curious to see if in the end, if Randall appeals this thing, if he misses any time for the Cowboys.
I just, to me though, why, if I'm Joseph Randall, I'm like, why hasn't this already been determined? What
sure
has been the holdup since February, between now and we're almost through October, whereas Johnny Manziel, this just happened. Is it because he's a quarterback? Is it because he was on the brink of maybe starting for Josh McCown, and McCown's been banged up, and you know, he's been playing a little bit in recent weeks, and he's much more of a high-profile figure. What exactly is it? Why has this one been sped up through the system, so it seems, whereas Randall's has dragged on since February? I'm not quite sure I understand distinction on the timing of that. That's what makes people question the consistency of the National Football League. How do you deal with all these different circumstances? I get it. Joseph Randall's track record and Johnny Manziel's track record are unique to themselves, and you take all that into account, but it's the time factor to me. This happened in February. As far as I know, there's nothing new that can add light to this story, and yet here we are in October hearing he probably is going to face some discipline for it.
As a fan of the NFL and someone who has the opportunity to talk about it on the radio, I don't mind the idea that Roger Goodell had when he came in. You know, where the whole protect the shield thing, whatever. But the idea that, look, we don't want to have a bunch of guys that are coming across as criminals involved in our league, right? And I understand that part of it from Goodell's perspective.
Pac-Man Jones is kind of the poster child,
right,
at the time.
The complete lack of any kind of consistency as to when, how long, or what the suspensions are going to be for these players. It is so all over the place that when a story like this gets even reported with Joseph Randall, you have no idea what the league's going to do with it. Joseph Randall doesn't have any idea what the NFL may do with this story. Even with the charges dropped, he doesn't know. And he's just hanging in limbo for months and months. The guy's trying to get his career on the rails there in Dallas, and the whole time this story may or may not be hanging over his head. He doesn't really know.
And neither does his team, for that matter.
No.
And look, Dallas' season has gone off the rails here somewhat with Tony Romo and Dez Bryant missing as much time, but let's say they hadn't. And let's say Randall's rolling along because of the presence in part of those other guys taking pressure off the running game. And all of a sudden, you're the Cowboys. Are we going to be without this guy? And at what point are we going to be without him? And for how long are we going to be without him? And, you know, it just seems to me this is odd that these, particularly because we're hearing these reports basically on the same day, that Randall's got something coming that's been in the works going back to February. Manziel incident just occurred, and they've already thoroughly investigated it enough to their satisfaction that there's no discipline coming for Johnny Manziel whatsoever in this case. I just think something's not adding up.
There's
to me.
No level of consistency with what they're trying to do.
All right, we've got to take a break. We will come back and get you the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you as Jaguar fans, which Jaguar player or players do you think are due for a big step up in their level of play from the first half to the second half of the season? By the way, Duval Doom, as I would expect, tweeting us that there's no amount of money that he would give up to not be at that game. Does that make sense? There's no. Yes. I realize I'm in the minority, but no way. In other words, you couldn't buy the ticket off Duval Doom. Well, I bet he's got a price. Just not a realistic one. We've all got a price, brother. Hey, here's $1 million. You're not going to the game, okay? No one's paying $1 million, so I get it. I understand what he's saying. It would have to be something probably absurd, but he claims no amount of money would keep him from a game like that. And there are Jaguar fans that I think would feel that way. I remember walking down Bay Street when the Super Bowl was here, and I had my credential with my own photo on it. And the guy offered me $1,000 in cash, put it right out there in front of me, just waving $1,000 bills. And at the time, $1,000 to me meant a lot more than it does now. Not to say that $1,000 isn't $1,000. It's always going to mean a lot. But I'm like, bro, you couldn't even get in with this. It's got my face on it. Okay. He's like, I don't care. I'll take a chance. For about 2 seconds, I thought about it. I thought, no, I'll never get another credential to any NFL game ever again if I do that. But had it been a ticket, $1,000 wouldn't have moved me off of it. You start getting up into $3,300 for a less than $200 face value ducat, and you got to at least make that consideration at that point in time. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars Today. Taking a look at the fan feedback spotlight coming up next, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the home stretch, Jaguars Today on this Thursday morning. Glad you're with us here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I am rejuvenated. That's what the bye week did for me. I got a couple of days with extra sleep in, and I'm ready to roll now, Tony, for the rest of the NFL season. Much to the dismay of the listening audience, I do not plan on taking another day off from my Jaguars Today duties the rest of the way. I don't plan on it anyway. What about you? You going to take any time off? We don't take much during football season.
No.
Just kind of the grind, man.
Yeah.
Grind it out.
It's a good grind. I enjoy this one. You know, football season, I always, about Thanksgiving, it's like, all right, the finish line.
Yeah.
I can see it, and we'll see if I have that same kind of feeling this year. I'm not to that point yet.
Bye week perfectly placed, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Week 8's beautiful. Just right.
It's a good spot for it to be.
That's a good spot.
And hopefully the Jags... Really, that November thing and Thanksgiving has been as much a product of I had already been talking draft for 3 weeks by the time we got to Thanksgiving and just knew that it was another 5 months of that, basically. It gets old.
When
right?
the Jags are mathematically eliminated,
so hopefully,
we will turn our attention, I'm sure.
Yeah, so hopefully they stay in contention in this lousy, lousy AFC
South. Going to be hard not to right now. If Tennessee beats Houston, then... Each of those teams will have a minimum of 5 losses. And then if Indy loses to Carolina, which you'd expect them to at this point in time, and that's the thing. Indy could beat Carolina, but Carolina's at home on Monday Night Football.
I mean, Jacksonville could have beat
Carolina.
Right,
they could have. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's in the bag by any stretch of the imagination, but if those two results go the right way, Tennessee beats Houston and Carolina beats Indy, Jags are tied for first in the loss column, as you pointed out early in the week.
Yeah.
There you have it.
That's where they're at. That's where this division is at. You've watched your team for 7 games, Jacksonville, and you are an undefeated team beating Indianapolis away from being tied in the loss column for the division lead when you come back and play football again.
Who the hell wouldn't take 6-10 if it meant winning on tiebreakers and being the
you get a home playoff game.
Undistinguished you get a home playoff game, the most undistinguished division champ in league history. Who cares?
Right.
It's our division, and we own it.
You get a home playoff game against, like, the Jets. I mean, that's what you'd be getting.
That's exactly what you get, right? The Jets or Pittsburgh or somebody like that. coming in. Could you imagine?
That'd be awesome.
I mean, and look, go beat the Jets next week, and then you're going to feel like, well, we're going to do it again. Beat them twice in 1 year, and then you're a step closer.
Yeah.
We're getting ahead of ourselves right now. Let's just let's go. I won't say go Titans, but let's say screw it up again, Texans.
Yeah.
And go Panthers this week.
That'll work.
That's where we're at. All right, fan feedback spotlight today, asking Jaguar fans, Tony, which player or players do they expect a big second half step forward from? What kind of feedback did we get today?
Here's what we got from Irish Jaguar, James Sample. I expect him to do great things when he's back and healthy. From Green 80, Yeldon, seen flashes already, will get in a groove. Also, lots more goal line carries from Ocho Fisho, us and Derek Marks and Ryan Davis. From Daniel, I think that Julius Thomas will show why we brought him here during the second half. From Alvaro, Julius Thomas needs to be in sync with Blake Bortles when that happens. Red zone touchdowns. From Eric, I think it'll be Derek Marks. He showed flashes in London, and more rest and practice will be good. From Duval Doom, honestly hoping it's Albino Tiger. He rode hard after the bye week last year, so maybe. From Tealpocalypse, Julius Thomas and James Sample. From JP, probably an unfair answer because of injury, but it should be Marks and Thomas. And from Black Dog, Julius Thomas, better crossing routes. So there you go.
Got some on Facebook here. Teresa said, I'd have to say the Jaguar defense, they got a small taste of interceptions, scoop and score, and takeaways against the Bills and brought home the victory, and I believe they liked it, and we'll see more of it. Hashtag Jaguars today. Andrew said, more blitz hopefully means a bigger second half for Aaron Colvin. Kevin went with Marquise Lee, if he can walk, that is, says Kev. Chad said TJ Yeldon will get better the more carries he gets, and as the offensive line gets more reps together, look out for Branch to play better while playing for that next contract. Timothy said hopefully Ryan Davis. Bill went with TJ Yeldon. Larry, this is interesting because this is one that you wouldn't expect. A lot of people say Blake because he's on a pretty productive pace. I don't know if you saw the stat yesterday. I forget which NFL show I was watching, Insiders, whatever it was. I believe Blake has the largest gain in total QBR of any starting quarterback from last year to this year. Have you seen that?
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's up like 50 points.
He went. I want to say he went from like the mid-20s to maybe the high 60s,
yeah.
Something like that. So, yeah, 40-ish points. Derek Carr would be the next biggest leaper behind him. Larry said, I'm expecting Blake to step up by stopping the silly turnovers and putting the team on his back and crunching out some more wins. Eric said, Toby Gerhart, and then he followed up with when he's finally released. Oh, let's hope that's not the case, that he helps somebody else. Jose, the whole team, I still believe they can turn it around. Hashtag Jaguars today, hashtag Go Jags. And finally, Damon went with Ryan Davis with the sack total if they give him more playing time. Please, he can have 8.5 sacks by the end of the year. Play the man. So we'll see. I think TJ Yeldon is a guy that I can't be more impressed by what he did in London than I am right now. Coming off a week with limited practice, injured like he was. That's a pretty good Bills front seven, even without Kyle Williams in there.
Sure.
And for him to run like he did, Tony, and I do think, you know, more from the fantasy standpoint, I do think he's got to get more goal line carries, doesn't he? I mean, why wouldn't you give him the opportunity after what we saw this past week of just kind of banging your head in the wall with Toby Gerhart? Just mix it up. It can't be worse than it was trying to punch it in from the 1 yard line.
And hopefully the organization learns a lesson from it taking 5 weeks for them to figure out that they need to blitz. And instead, you know, Toby has that kind of performance in that kind of game, and maybe he's hurt, maybe he's not. I don't know, right? But I know it's not working. And to this point in the season, Toby Gerhart being your short yardage guy isn't working. So give somebody else a chance, and the most obvious guy to give a chance to in that situation to me is TJ Yeldon.
Of course. I thought it was interesting that Ryan O'Halloran actually put Telvin Smith in there, because I think most people would say, wow, Telvin's already playing among, you know, the best performers on the defensive side of the football, but his point being that he thinks, you know, this is the kind of guy that has a knack and a nose for the football, and we see him on the practice field always around the ball. When it gets popped up on a tip drill, things like that, he just seems to have a knack to be in the right place at the right time, and he thinks maybe that pick six will get him off in that department. Hey, could have had another one in the end zone. Would have been a vital one as well.
He thinks if he caught that, he was taking it to the house, by the way.
Oh, is that what he said?
Yeah, he said, I saw
it. He's going 102 or
yeah,
whatever
said,
it was.
I saw it happening in front of me, and I just dropped the ball. Like he said, I shouldn't have jumped. If I had just stood there and caught it and run, he said that he saw another one there. And I think there is something there with Telvin Smith, where before the season started, you expected him. I'm not saying that you expected three pick sixes out of anybody this year, but you expected Telvin to be the type of guy that produces every other week or so a play where you go, whoa. You know,
force some fumbles.
Right, it's
right.
A game-changing type play. He's been solid, right? There's been nothing wrong with the way Telvin Smith has played this year, but this was the first week where he made a couple plays that you're like, that's game-changing stuff, and that's one of the guys you're relying on to make those kinds of plays because of his athleticism.
Even without those, though, I think he's played among the best because they don't always show up, but he runs guys down. You know,
sure.
He's used his speed, and it shows up as a tackle in the box score, but I think he's been one of the more impressive guys. So for me, it wasn't really much of a consideration because he's already playing at a higher level than I think a lot of the guys. But if he could take a significant step forward, that'd be fantastic. Look, they'll take it anywhere they can get it. But I think you're right. For the pass rush, it's going to have to be manufactured a little bit. And I have no problem with that. You know what? The other way hasn't worked to this point in time. Whether it's the horses, whether it's the scheme, let's send some more guys and get after it like they did over there in London. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks for playing along today on Jaguars Today. We appreciate Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union for checking in with us on the Metro Diner chat line at the chat counter today. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Back at it again tomorrow. David Garrard scheduled to join us as we get you ready for the weekend of Week 8 with the Jags on a bye. Of course, tonight you got New England and Miami, and Tony and I will be talking about that one and every other one from a fantasy perspective coming up at 2 o'clock with the FanDuel Fantasy Forecast. Coming up next, though, it's XL Primetime right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!